I know that's a little bit more Wes Moreno's music, but he is out ill today, unable for our interview. Instead, we've got Eric. oh, my God. My Eric Gilmore. One of my dearest friends, and I forgot his last name for a second. Hey, it's great to be 55. Eric Gilmore is the Director of Public Safety in Escambia County, pinch hitting for Wes this morning. They got the meeting coming up at 9:30, 9:45 this morning. Eric, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
All right, thank you, Andrew. I guess it's okay to be here since you don't know who I am, but anyway, let's go.
Feel free to take it personally. I understand.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about things related to public safety. This is kind of a funny one because you're sitting in for Wes, but yet, am I right? You don't have anything on the agenda today. That's weird.
You telling me that is absolutely weird. I think this is the first time in my career as public safety director that I do not have an agenda item. So, yes, that is weird.
So your reward is to do the 6:30 interview with the radio guy.
I am. I get to do this with you. All right.
That's so funny. All right. Well, a lot of things are going on in public safety. This has been true for a little while, but the next generation 911 call routing service. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think this is a big deal. I don't quite understand why it is that we're late to this party, but tell me what it does and what we got now.
No, absolutely. It's a great system. What it does for you as a 911 caller, if you're traveling the interstate or you're up near the Alabama-Florida line or anywhere where there's a municipality that might take over your 911 call, NextGen 911 actually hones in on where you are so you get to the right 911 center or PSAP the first time. So, we have a lot of times where you're calling 911, you're traveling the interstate, and you see an accident, and you're right there on that border, and you call 911, and it kicks you to Santa Rosa County. But the accident's in, Escambia County. It picks you up as in Escambia County and transfer you to the right one. That way you don't have to get transferred through 911 center. So it's pretty good about pinpointing where you are so you get to the right PSAP the first time you call and not have to do a transfer. So that's one piece of it that helps out and identify and hone in where you are. And also helps the responders. That way we can always see where you're at, but it's always got some lag or some time where it's not actually 100% accurate, but this is actually pinpointing where you're at. It helps us get to you much faster and get to you accurately. The second thing it does is some of the neat things that we do, like the Blue Angels Air Show. When we were out there on Pensacola Beach and we got four set up in our incident command post, we do have dispatch in the back of the trailer there. And when you call 911 during the air show, of course, it has the route from the beach back to W Street here where our 911 center is. Then they take your call, then they dispatch units from there and go out from there. We can actually draw a geofence around the barrier island, and the dispatchers in Thor sitting at Santa Rosa Island Authority in the parking lot can actually intercept your call and take your call right there on our island with you and right there where all the resources are and get you dispatched a lot quicker.
Nice.
So for large-scale incidences, we can intercept those when we got dispatch sitting in with us. So it cuts down on time there as well. So it's kind of a neat system. It's an upgraded we needed to get to. It's nothing new. It's happening region-wide in the Panhandle of Florida. Everybody's getting upgraded. But it's just another piece of the puzzle that we're trying to get better at. Eventually, we are looking at a new CAD system here, which is our computer-aided dispatching. And when we do that and integrate it with the next gen, we'll be even more robust in how we take your call and how we handle your car. So we're looking forward to that. So it's little pieces to help out, and we're building to get better.
By the way, Thor is the command center. I know acronyms, you guys speak them all the time, but Thor is the command center that you guys use in case people were wondering, why is he talking about the God of Thunder? Well, they're not.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. But the other piece is, we are kind of last to get this, though, right? Didn't Santa Rosa's had this for a couple of years, right?
Santa Rosa's had it. We did get the state funding. It was around $1.5 million that we received to put the switches in and get everything upgraded. So, like I said, it was state funding, and as the funding come out, we were one of the last ones to get it. Walton County is, I think, still going through theirs, and Okaloosa, I think, they're upgraded. But, yes, we were kind of toward the tail end of getting it.
Got it. You've had some, there's a bunch of things that are moving in public safety. You've got, first of all, you got new firehouses. You got, what, two brand new ones and two rebuilds. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. We have two brand new stations going on that will be going online, Kingsville Road Station and Paradise Beach out there on Bower Road. And then the two rebuilds will be Myrtle Grove. That existing station will be torn down and will be built back brand new. and Pleasant Grove out there toward the Interity Point.
And the Paradise Beach one is the one that is the one that's been costing everybody money because they haven't had good ISO rating in that region, and that is going to be a major improvement to fire coverage for that part of town, right? And for those residents particularly.
That is absolutely correct. We did have an existing substation in subsequent years, and as the substation went away. So they had a service, and then it went away. And before, when ISO counted it they received a lower ISO rating because the service was there. And then when that was taken away, the ISO, of course, rated them poorly. So their insurance went up due to now not having it. So we're putting a system back in place. It'll be a 24/7 crew out there at that station as well as Kingsfield. So we'll have two full-time staffing companies at both of those new stations coming online.
And are those the manufactured buildings? I know Wes had been talking about that a couple of years ago when this came up, and instead of a brand-new facility, which is, of course, more expensive and more time-consuming to install, what's the build plan for those?
No, absolutely. So those are design builds. So they're not going to be the prefab. They're not going to be. They're going to be red iron. So it will be a red iron station. It won't be like like you think of a traditional pre-manufactured, like a modular, just come in and set the boxes in.
Yeah.
It's actually going to be a built station. It's in the design phase right now. We're at 30%. We're hoping to get everything done by as far as the design and the architecture done by March. And once we start groundbreaking, we've been told that it'll take 180 days to build that station.
And
I'm sorry, 18 months.
Okay, so we're still quite a ways out. I mean, we're 2 years away from getting this finished. Is that right?
That's correct. So we're about 2 years out. 18 months is what the build time is when we get everything finished.
Right. Okay. All right. Because we have new fire stations and because we have growing population, you guys are training new cadets and new paramedics, right?
That is absolutely correct. We're excited. We have taken over the academies for the Fire Academy here in Escambia County. We've already had one successful class that we pushed through and had 100% pass rate. We have just finished up our second academy with 13 students in it. And I'm happy to say that all 13 students passed our academy and is successfully transitioning to take the state exam this week, and we don't have any anticipation that all 13 of those individuals will not pass, so we're hoping to have another 100% pass rate. So that's pretty exciting that our cadets, that we have a good academy, we're putting good products out there and good people out there who want to respond to our citizens.
Now, what does that do for us staffing-wise when they all come on board? Does that get us to where we are? Does that fill vacancies created by retirements or transfers or quitting? Does that get us, close to full? What are we going to be when they're in the system?
Good question. So these 13 will actually backfill some of the retirees that we've had go out and some of the transitions we've had. So we'll be at full staffing. So we'll be 100% staffed. With the 13 cadets coming on online. But I will say that when we build the two new stations, mm-hmm. Kingsfield and Paradise Beach, we're going to have to fill those stations as well. We won't have staffing currently to fill those stations. So we will do the academy process again. So if anybody's interested in becoming a firefighter, the cadet program is the route to go. So I would encourage anybody to put in if they want to become a firefighter with us. Well, we bring you on board. We pay you while you're going through the academy. And then once you transition to a full-time firefighter, we'll bump you up to your starting firefighter pay. So, and we pay for your training. So everything's paid for. So you come in, you get a job, you're getting paid by us, and you're getting trained by us the whole time. So it's, and you get, OJT, you get on-job training, because you'll be in stations, you'll be talking to crews, so you get to see what the job's about as well while you're going through the academy.
So let's see, two fire stations, three shifts. That means somewhere in the vicinity of 25 people you're going to have to take on in 2 years to fill those two stations?
That is absolutely correct. We'll have 24 openings in the for minimum for those two stations. If we don't have any other vacancies at the time, we'll have 24 openings for people to apply for.
Okay. I thought my math was right, but I wanted to check with you. Also, you've had a couple of paramedics here recognized statewide. Is that right?
That's correct. So Nicholas Watley received Florida Paramedic of the Year. He was recognized in Tallahassee at state capital. That was great. And then we also are at the conference down in Orlando. And then we had Philip Cook got the Star Award for his life-saving measures, and at the Capitol got recognized for that. So we've got a lot of good men and women doing a lot of good things here. We don't get it right every time, but majority of the time we do, and we strive to get it right. And we got a lot of good people working for our citizens out there.
How is staffing in EMS?
Staffing EMS, good question. So we are down, I think we're vacant one paramedic, and we have a couple of relief positions. So we are absolutely just about full, to be honest with you. And that's exciting because those people are hard to capture. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, we're going to actually ask for more paramedics and more EMTs, which that will help bolster us more and get more trucks out on the road. Cause that's what we do, what we need. And we've gotten more staff over this past year and asked for more funding to put toward that staff. And it just seems that every time we go, okay, if we get these 9 people on board or we get these 10 people additional on board, we should meet this call load. And it seems like the public just knows that, hey, they got 10 more people. Let's call 911 more frequently. So I'm telling you, it's just every time we think we're meeting the mark or getting there toward it, the call load increases exponentially. And a lot of it is unnecessary. We're doing I can't tell you how many refusals on scene we're doing. Well, we're treating on scene for people now. We got Dr. Abo here, and he does a great job that if you need an ambulance, we're gonna take you and transport you. But if you don't need an ambulance and we get to you, crew's going to call him in and say, hey, let's give him XYZ drug, treat in place, because we're getting a lot of sick calls. We're getting a lot mm-hmm. of people who's nausea, vomiting, that don't need to go to a hospital, but we can give them a quick treatment or something like that and do a refusal on scene. So we've been doing that a lot frequently here lately to try to keep the ambulances as quick as they can back on the road so we can get those, cardiacs or strokes and things like that.
Hey, I know since you were talking about training and the responses, I know you saw yesterday Scambia Sheriff's Office put out the body cam video of the interview, examination, whatever you want to call it. The response was first from EMS, then the sheriff's office to the person who was reported to be passed out in their blue Jeep on the road. And then, of course, later on in the day, that person allegedly crossed the center line, was impaired, and caused the death of 2 people over on Scenic Highway. The question I have is, you guys haven't put out anything related to the EMS person who, I don't want to say cleared, but the kind of the perception was that she had talked to him and didn't detect any medical reason to either, treat him or detain him or anything like that. But you've seen the video. What is it their job to figure out if somebody's inebriated, harmed, had a stroke? I mean, you tell me. I just don't know what to think about this case.
So we did get the call for unconscious, unknown type problem. We sent a sprint out there because a lot of times the public calls in somebody who's homeless and they're sleeping on the side of the road, call in. There's an unconscious person on the side of the road. It happens all the time. So we get out there, they wake up, they're just asleep. In this case, the paramedic pulled up. As she pulled up, walked up to the door, the person was already conscious and alert. He was already 2, so she didn't have to do a sternum rub or a witness being slumped over a steering wheel or anything like that. She made contact with him. She goes down her line of questioning. Are you having a medical emergency? Are you cognitive? Answered her questions. Vitals are good respirations, shortened her breath. Are you having a medical emergency? So at that point, I mean, she's done her evaluation on what she can perceive, and everything's checking off. She's answering her questions lucidly, answering them correctly. No problems there. Good vitals, good respirations, no medical emergency. So at that moment in time, there's no medical need.
Yeah,
we're going with the medical need. So at that moment in time, then the deputy's there, of course, and she does her thing. So, but as far as our part goes, do you have a medical need? If you have a medical need, I'm here to treat you. I'm here to transport you. I'm here to take care of you and do those things. But there wasn't anything that gave her any indication that there was an issue or a medical issue going on with this particular individual.
If she had thought that he was impaired, drunk, high, anything other than just having a weird speech pattern, which people do, or being, hard to understand, which is true of some people, is that within her zone of responsibility to identify and or raise to the deputy in a situation like this?
I've been on things where we have had an incident where something like that's happened. And you can, if I can just absolutely smell the odor of alcohol, that's one thing. I can get the deputy, say, heavy ETH on board.
Got it.
And then they'll go do their thing from there. If I think that something is absolutely out of whack or something, yeah, we do work with our law enforcement partners because we don't, I mean, we can't do field sobriety. We're not trained on that.
Right.
But we can say, if they're answering my questions, and all I got is a little bit of a slur, but it kind of clears up. There's no medical issue, and you've answered my questions correctly. I look at the deputy and go, okay, if you want to take it further from here, it's up to them at that moment because we don't do field sobrieties or anything like that. So.
Okay, and I thought that was the case, but I wanted to ask just to be sure because, I think a lot of people have looked at that video and, of course, given the horrific outcome in the end of later that day, you know, everybody's like, man, why couldn't we have found a way to stop this? And, you know, I'm looking at it too, and it's just, you know, sometimes just everything doesn't quite work the way together that it really should. Eric, right. Oh, hey, just one last quick thing. You and I have talked about this repeatedly, but the fifth fire station for like Brownsville or the Midtown Commerce Park or whatever, and or the training center, are we done talking about a fifth? Like, we're not getting a fifth fire station, right? Or is that still up in the air?
It's still up in the air. Oh. We're still working. Chief Harrison's going to be working with Commissioner May, and they're going to be talking about still trying to do something in that that area of the Brownsville area. So it's still up in the air right now. I can't give you a hard definitive on that.
And the training facility, how close to getting that kind of going are we?
As soon as we nail down the property, we've got some money to throw toward it to start getting props and getting it secure, getting things like that. It's just nailing down that property, and that's what Chief Harrison and Commissioner May are going to be working towards. So.
All right, very good. Eric Gilmore, on a day when he has no items on the agenda, Wes Moreno does not feel good, so he said, why don't you go take the radio call? So, Eric, as always, thank you for the time. I appreciate the work that you guys do, and certainly your people do amazing stuff. But we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate you. Have a good day.